You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Happy to be back in the swing of things. I'm wishing everyone prosperity in 2019. And thank you for tuning in to the Women Are Worthy podcast on Up to Me Radio. My name is Jacqueline Charles, the host and creator of the Women Are Worthy show. I'd like to thank you all for supporting our show. Please don't forget to subscribe to our channel by going to uptomeradio.com. That's up, the number 2, meradio.com website. And select the Women Are Worthy show. We apply the 3E formula in every podcast. And in the event you're not sure what the 3E formula is, here it is. We're here to educate, empower, and entertain. So buckle up and enjoy the ride. The ride may get bumpy, but trust me, by the time we're done, it's going to be smooth. I want to send a special shout out and thank you to Atlanta Life Media Agency for sponsoring and supporting the Women Are Worthy podcast. Atlanta Life Media Agency is a premier Georgia television, film and entertainment, behind the camera, production support, and consulting agency. Please take the time to check them out by going to www.atlma.net. That's Atlanta Life Media Agency. That's where all the connections are made. And if you'd like to tune in or join our conversation as a sponsor, go ahead and email us at info@uptomeradio.com. info@uptomeradio.com. Now, I am just so happy. With everything going on in the world today regarding race relations, today our topic for the show, for our podcast, is one race, the human race. We have a very special guest on our podcast. This woman, I fell in love with her years ago, and I need to tell her she's going to adopt me, whether she knows it or not, because behind the scenes, we've been going through some things, connecting, and I feel like she's my mom. You know, we're related. You know, we'll talk about that when she gets on the show, on the podcast. I watched her. She also was on Jada Pickett's Red Table Talk on Facebook several months ago. So I know I had to get her because I really believe we're related. So I wanted her to get her on the show. Our guest is Miss Jane Elliott. Jane is best known as the teacher who on April 5th, 1968, the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, she put her third grade students through an eye-opening exercise to teach them about racial prejudice. So without further ado, I'd like to take the time to introduce Miss Jane Elliott. Hello, Jane. Welcome to the Women Are Worthy podcast. How are you?
Well, we'll find out, won't we? I think I'm all right, but I'm not sure.
First, let me start off by congratulating you on all your efforts in changing views or educating views on race. I really want to thank you for doing that.
You don't have to thank me for doing that. That's what the educators are supposed to do, is to get people out of their, to lead people out of their ignorance. And it's my job to lead people out of the idea that there's more than one race. There's only one. We're all descendants of the same ancestors who evolved in sub-Saharan Africa from 300,000 to 500,000 years ago. That's the way it is. To deny that is to remain ignorant.
Jane, for those who are not familiar with your work, and there are a few out there, so can you please talk to them, explain to them about the experiment you conducted in 1968, please?
Well, Martin Luther King Jr. had been one of our heroes in February, along with, unfortunately, Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett. Now, that was racist teaching. I didn't realize it. I taught that Martin Luther King Jr. was doing the right thing, that we all ought to listen to him. He was doing the right thing. And he was dead on April 4th. And I watched this horror on television, and I watched Walter Cronkite, asked three leaders of the black community that night, when our leader was killed, his widow held us together, who's going to keep your people in line? I was absolutely infuriated by that question. The ignorance of that question was absolutely unacceptable. So I changed the channel, and there was Dan Rather saying to three leaders of the black community, don't you Negroes think you should feel sympathy for us white folks because we can't feel the anger at this killing that you Negroes can? How could a human being not feel anger at the killing of Martin Luther King Jr.? At that moment, I decided that the next day, instead of just learning the Sioux Indian prayer, which we were going to learn because we are learning the Indian unit, the Sioux Indian prayer that says, O Great Spirit, keep me from ever judging a man until I've walked a mile in his moccasins, instead of just learning that prayer, I was going to arrange to have it answered for them. I decided at that moment that I would do what Hitler did. I would separate amongst the students in my classroom according to color of their eyes, and then I would treat them positively or negatively on the basis of their eye color. Now, I didn't invent this. I learned it from Adolf Hitler, and you need to realize that what's happening in this country today is what happened during the Hitlerian years in Europe. We are making backward progress. It is absolutely unbelievable. I didn't realize how powerful that exercise would be. If I had known what was going to happen to my own children and to me and to my parents and to my husband as a result of doing that exercise, I might not have done it, and that would have been too bad. That would have been educational malfeasance not to use something that powerful. I realize now that that would have been a huge mistake. I went into my classroom the next morning. We talked about the killing of Martin Luther King Jr. I realized they weren't learning a thing. They were just regurgitating what they thought I wanted them to say. So I finally said, do you kids have any idea how it would feel to be something other than white in this country? No. I said, would you like to do something today that will help you know that? Yeah. It was like we've already gotten out of spelling and handwriting. Keep this broad talking. We don't have to learn anything all day long. Kids do it all the time. So I said, okay, today we're going to judge students by the color of their eyes. And since I'm blue-eyed, and most of the students in this room are blue-eyed, blue-eyed people are going to be on the bottom the first day. And the kids said, what do you mean? I said, brown-eyed people are smarter than blue-eyed people. They're cleaner. They're smarter, they are more cooperative. Just look around this room and see how well brown-eyed children are listening and look at the blueies. And from that moment for the rest of the day, I found out, number one, that I'm a racist. Number two, that my students were exhibiting the behaviors, the brown-eyed students exhibited the behaviors that they had seen in their parents, their teachers, their preachers, all the significant adults in their environment had taught those little brown-eyed white children how to treat those that they consider inferior. I learned more that day than my students did because I had more to learn. I was older and I had spent years learning racism and had spent years teaching racism. I learned more that day than I wanted to know. And after I did it, I couldn't not do it the next year and every year after that, because how could you deny students education if you're an educator that is that powerful and that meaningful?
Jane, I'm really getting emotional right now because to see the experiment that you did, it's just bringing me to tears right now because, like you said, had you known what was going to happen to your kids being teased and things like that and your parents and, you know, the people in your circle, you wouldn't have done it and it would have been a shame. But to see that you are so fearless in doing this, I can't begin to tell you how grateful I am that you did go ahead and do this.
Wait a minute. There's something you have to realize, and I don't think you do. It doesn't mean you're fearless if you're a white woman and you decide to do something out of the ordinary. Because the fact that I was a white woman made it all right for me to do. If a black woman had done that day, she'd have been fired that evening, and she might have been killed. It doesn't take courage for a white woman to stand up and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. This has to stop. You see, I realized then, and I have realized more so ever since, that my heroes are not white males as I was taught to see white males as heroes. My heroes are black women who have been taking this nonsense in this country for 400 years. And they keep on keeping on in spite of all the things that white women allow to happen to them. Right now, we're dealing with white people who don't like the statement, Black Lives Matter. And you see, you have to realize what their perception is. Perception is everything. White women, white people hear the statement, Black Lives Matter, and they hear only Black Lives Matter. People of other color groups hearing that statement hear, Black Lives Matter too. And Yellow Lives Matter, and Brown Lives Matter. They all matter, but you have to put the word too on, otherwise white folks think you're saying only. We are governed by our perceptions, and perception is everything. It didn't take courage for me to do that exercise. It took courage for my offspring to continue to go to school in that system because they were spit on, they were beaten, their belongings were destroyed, they were physically abused by their peers and psychologically abused by their teachers because they had what to this day is called an N-word lover in on the faculty. I would rather be called an N-word lover than an N-word hater. You want to call me a name? That's a name I don't mind.
Jane, the fact that you've come to this realization, why do you think other white women have not come to the same conclusion that you have?
They haven't had the experience that I had. And when I put teachers, and I don't put many teachers through this because teachers have the right not to learn, which is really scary. But when I put educators through that exercise, and I did at the University of Northern Iowa last month, they gave me an honorary doctoral degree, which was lovely, but we had a little meeting the night before the ceremony, and I told them how I feel, what I do, and I told them that I think it's time for us to teach, to spend as much time teaching reason, rights, and responsibility as the three R's of reading, writing, and arithmetic. And when those folks left there, and those are college professors, one stopped and said, reason, rights, and responsibility. I never heard it before. I will start teaching that to my teacher trainees tomorrow morning. You can teach a teacher something if they are willing to learn and if they see the necessity for learning. The necessity for learning about those who are different from ourselves and for accepting as equal citizens of the world is obvious because within 30 years, white people will be a numerical minority in the United States of America. Within 30 years, white people will find out how it feels to be on the receiving end of that which we have been dishing out for the last 400 years. Folks, white folks say to me, well, if they get power, aren't they going to want to treat us the way we've treated them? If you're worried about that, what you need to do is change the way you treat other people. And see, I don't believe in the golden rule. I believe in the platinum rule. The golden rule says, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Treat others the way you want to be treated. No, I'm sure that not everybody wants to be treated the way I want to be treated. In order for me to find out how somebody wants to be treated, I have to ask them how they want to be treated. I have to listen to the answer. And if what they ask me to do is not indecent, illegal, or immoral, I have to do it. Treat others the way they want to be treated. But in order to do that, you have to communicate with them. But you see, the way we say the golden rule, you don't have to communicate with somebody. You have to say, well, it's good enough for me. Why isn't it good enough for you? But when I go on a college campus and I say to 200, 300, 1,500 students, now, will every white person in this room who wants to be treated the way we have treated people of color in this country for the last 400 years, if you'd like that for you, will you please stand? Nobody stands. Nobody stands. And then somebody says, well, they're going to want to treat us when we treat them. I say, okay, well, every black person in this room who wants to get even with every white person, please stand. Maybe two people will stand. And I say, look around, white folks. There are only two people standing. And I say, now, let's be honest about this. Will every black person in this room who wants to get even with one or two white people stand? Then they all stand. And I say, folks, you see what they're telling you? Is just don't be one of those one or two that they want to get even with. They don't want to get even with you. Unless you treat them badly, then you're asking to be treated badly. All you have to do is treat others the way they want to be treated. And the students look at me like, I never thought of that. But that's the way it is. And we are all members of the family of man. So I say, you people are all my cousins and the cousins of everybody else around you. So now here's what I want you to do. Turn to the person on your right or left or in front of you or behind you. Stick out your hand and say, hello, cousin. And they gasp, and then they turn and say, hello, cousin, and then the conversation in the room begins. In the group, people are conversing with people who are now their cousins, who were always their cousins, and they didn't know it. every human being on the face of the earth is my 30th to 50th cousin. And if you don't believe that, you need to read Robert Wald Sussman's book, The Myth of Race. And if you really think that white people started any of this, then you need to read Anthony Browder's book, Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization. It will blow you away, and it will blow the lid off the idea of white male superiority.
Okay, so I was correct. I don't stand corrected. I was correct when I said we were related earlier, you know, because we've connected, you know, we've been having conversations. I said we were related. Jane, here's a question. How did you get to this space of helping people, but people meaning African Americans whose voices are not being heard? How did you get there?
Well, first, number one, I was raised by a father who said, you never judge a book by its cover. And he also said, judge not that you be, he knew the Bible frontwards and backwards because that was the way his father was. Don't judge other people until you've lived their lives. Don't judge other people, you don't know what they're living through. And Martin Luther King Jr. said the same kinds of things that my father did. I lived in Waterloo, Iowa for several years. My husband worked for the National Tea Store Company, National Tea Food Company. And his store was in the North End, which was the black section of Waterloo. He met some of the most fabulous black people you could ever imagine while he ran that store. He had nothing but positive experiences with black people. I met black people that I would never have known if I hadn't married my husband and we hadn't lived in Waterloo for several years. I knew that we'd been lied to, and I swore I would never do anything racist. And then we were transferred to Fort Dodge. The company transferred him a lot because he was on the way up. They transferred him to Fort Dodge, and we had to rent our house. We were buying a little house there and had to rent the house out. And I put an ad in the paper that the house was for rent. Telephone rang, answered the telephone, and this person said, do you rent the coloreds? And I can remember as clearly right now as if it happened yesterday. I knew that if I rented to a person of color, and then we had to come back there, that my neighbors would have a fit. So I did a racist thing, and they said, this is an all-white neighborhood. And I knew then that I had defected to the enemy. All I had to say was, if you've got the money, you've got the house. But instead, I made her make the decision as to whether or not to rent the house. That was racist behavior, and I will pay for that as long as I live because I can't get it out of my head. I know what I did, and at that moment I decided, no, my life is not going to be dictated to this anymore. That's the last time I allowed myself to act in a way that said, you aren't good enough to be my neighbor.
When do you think you'll forgive yourself for that?
If you forgive yourself for all the mistakes you've made, you will do them again. You will make those same mistakes again. If you forgive yourself, you're liable to try to forget it. Those who forget the mistakes of the past are doomed to repeat them. I'm lucky that that's still stuck in my head. But something even better is stuck in my head. I showed my father, he was 60 years old, I showed my father the first film that was made in my classroom. The BBC made a film of my students going through that exercise. 6 years old, and after it was finished, he stood up. He took his red handkerchief out of his blue bib overall back pocket, wiped his eyes, blew his nose, and said, at the age of 60, I wish somebody had taught me that when I was 9 years old. If he had known that when he was 9 years old, I wouldn't have said, this is an all-white neighborhood. There are things you'd best not forget. And there are things for which, if I want to forgive myself, I can. I have to forgive my own ignorance. But I don't have the right to be that ignorant anymore, and I never will again.
Jane, do you think racism can be unlearned, and if so, how?
I know it can be unlearned. I've helped children to unlearn it. We created, white people created racism. A higher power created the environment that allowed human beings to evolve and to exist. Okay? But white people created racism. And anything you create, you can destroy. We could destroy racism in 2 generations. The students who have been through that exercise at the age of 9 in my classroom are not like their peers to this day. And they say to this day, I don't like black jokes. I don't listen to black jokes. I don't laugh at black jokes. People don't tell black jokes around me. You can learn not to be racist. You have to be carefully taught to be a racist. In the last act of the play, South Pacific, the song that they sing is, you have to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are differently made, of people whose skins are a different shade. You have to be carefully taught. You have to be taught before it's too late to hate all the people your relatives hate. You have to be taught by 7 or 8 to have to be carefully taught. We carefully teach racism. We could just as carefully teach un-racism. We could un-teach racism. That's what we... I'm an educator. The word educator comes from the root duck deuce, which means lead, the prefix e, which means out, the suffix ate, which means the act of, and the suffix or, which means one who does. An educator is one who is engaged in the act of leading people out of ignorance. And the number one ignorance in this country is racism.
Jane, one of the things I have a problem with personally is when I'm completing applications, I have to choose a race. And do you ever see that?
Do you?
Well, I do. I'm going to be honest with you. I'll choose other. And because there's no, and we're going to get to what race there is, you know, in your mind, not in your mind, in reality. And I have a problem with that. Do you ever see this changing in your lifetime?
Well, yeah, it'll change when enough of us say that's ridiculous and just put the word human. Where it says race on any of those applications, I put human, and where it says sex, I put yeah. And they bring it to me immediately and say, you have to put your race on here. I say, that is my race. Now, if you want to know what color my skin is, you put the word skin color on there, and then I'll put peach. Because I am not white, and neither is anyone else. And I say to the person who questions me about it, look, can you see where my hair starts and my skin leaves off? Well, yes. And what color is my hair? Well, it's white. And is my skin white? Well, no, but that's the word we use. I said, that's the word you use. Because obviously you don't see the difference between white skin, white hair, and pink skin. And when I refer to males, white males, as big pink men, they don't like it. But that's what they are. They aren't white. Because you, period, it's time to stop dealing with the word race and start dealing with the word color. And then you've got the person who is a well-meaning liberal white woman who say to me, I don't see color, I'm colorblind. And I say, I knew that before you said it, because if you weren't colorblind, you wouldn't wear that shirt with those pants. Or somebody will say to me, I'm from a biracial family. And I say, really? Which of your parents came from outer space? They get all upset when I say that, because if your parents are from the planet Earth, you are biracial because there's only one race on the face of the Earth. Get the frick over it.
And see, this is how we were conditioned. That's why, you know, we were conditioned that way. So let me ask you this, Jane, since you brought something up. Well, I want to bring this up. What are your thoughts about the N-word? Meaning, when black people say it's okay for us to say it and it empowers us, but it's not okay for Caucasian people to say it. What are your thoughts about
Number one, I don't believe in the word Caucasian. White people didn't come from the Caucasus Mountains. They came from Africa. See, I don't believe in the word Caucasian. As far as the N-word, that is the black community's word, and their black children, if they want their black children to be allowed to say it, then that is up to them. That is not up to me. But when people call me white, it makes me really cross.
I know, I remember.
Yeah, come on, get real here. But you know, and if you call me honky, I'm going to say, yeah, I understand why you're calling me honky. I can understand that because you're talking about the way I behave. But when you call me white, that's a misnomer. I ain't white, folks. And none of my relatives are white. They're all shades of brown and black, because we're all, if we trace our DNA back far enough, we'll find out that we all came from a country in Africa. So I don't have a problem. I know there are people who do have a problem with the N-word being used by young black males, particularly black males and females. They have a problem with that. They say that's denigrating to our race. Well, wait a minute. It's not denigrating to your race. You're a member of the human race. So it's not about race. It's about the ignorance about skin color. And when black people say to me, that person doesn't like me because of the color of my skin, and I say, no, you don't understand. The reason that person doesn't like you isn't because of the color of your skin. It's because of that person's ignorance about skin color. But when you say it's because of the color of your skin, then you are taking responsibility for how that person feels about you. When you say it's because of that person's ignorance, you're making that person responsible for what they say and what they do and what they feel. Don't take responsibility. Don't let somebody else force you to be the reason they don't like you. They don't like you because of the color of your skin. They don't like you because they're ignorant about skin color.
Jane, when you were growing up, or when you started doing this, rather when you started doing this, were you ever fearful of your life and that of your children?
Oh, since I started doing it, I am. Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been threatened with death in all kinds of ways. I've been threatened with death while I was standing on the stage by a big, tall Texan, a heavy-set, obviously, Neanderthal Texan came up with his children, his wife, and told me, you ain't going to be doing this much more. I said, and what are you going to do about it? He said, we're going to take care of you. I said, really? You're going to send me money? Oh, and then he turned around and stormed. He was just furious. That isn't what he meant by taking care of me. And I knew that. When they took me out of Uniontown, Pennsylvania, three carloads of black people did, because the teachers that I had put through the exercise in a very informal way in the morning called the superintendent and said, if you don't get that bitch out of town, we're going to shoot her. Three carloads of black people took me to the Pennsylvania Turnpike going just as fast as they could because they didn't want me to be shot in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. Yeah, I've been threatened. My life has been threatened. But now, at this age, somebody shoots me and is like, thank you, now I'll never get cancer, fool.
Jane, how did you...
I'm standing on a stage in a college, and invariably, down there in about the third row, there are three little boys. Now, usually they have those god-awful red caps on that say, make America hate again. Now, make no mistake about that. What that cap means is, make America hate again. And they're talking, and I stop and I say, look, fellas, I know what you're talking about. You three would like to see me dead because of what I do to decrease the level of racism in this country. Let me tell you something. If you shoot me because of what I do, you might make a martyr out of me, and then you might have to spend the rest of your life celebrating Jane Elliott Day once a year. Now, do you want to do that? And then they put their fingers up in a cross, and they go, no. I say, then keep your mouth shut and listen to what I'm saying. And then they shut up and listen to what I'm saying.
You are something else. You are phenomenal. Oh, my
God. No, I'm not. I'm just not afraid anymore. I was afraid in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. When I woke up that morning, I got ready to leave, and I stood there in the door of my room and looked out, and here I was in a two-story motel, and there were windows all around me, and I thought behind one of those windows could be the person who was sent here to shoot me. So I backed up, closed the door, and I thought, now here's the way it is. You can either stand here and be petrified, paralyzed with fear, and never do this work again, or you can walk out of here and check out and go to the airport. What are you going to do? I had four kids at home and a husband at that time, and I thought, I don't really have a choice here. I'm not going to quit doing what I'm doing. I'm going to have to take a chance. So I picked up the handle of my luggage cart, and I stiffened my shoulders. I guess, my muscles, I thought if the bullets hit me, they'd bounce off if my muscles were tight enough. And I walked. I didn't run. I walked quickly up to the desk to check out. I didn't run because I don't believe you run because you're scared. I believe you're scared because you run. So I walked quickly, I got to the desk, and I thought, well, you damn dummy, look what you just did. You allowed them to scare you and darn near to death. This will never happen again. I have not been scared since. What's the worst thing they can do to me? Kill me. So what, at my age? Death is not something I worry about. You get to the point where, no, I don't worry about being killed by some fool who wants to make a name for himself. And a name for himself, which if he goes into a penitentiary, the black inmates will take care of him rather quickly.
Listening to you speak, what would you like your legacy to be?
I would like for my legacy to be people to realize that there's only one race, we're all members of the human race, and it doesn't take a brilliant person to teach that, because if it did, I wouldn't have taught it. What it takes is somebody who realizes that our very lives depend upon those around us, not only those who are like us, but those who are different from us, that we wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for some black people with skill, talent, ability, who managed to populate every landmass on the face of the earth without modern technology. How in the devil did they do that? You know how they did it, and I know how they did it, with brilliance. And I want people to know, after they read Robert Vaughn Sussman's book, they'll realize, when I was on the Jada Pinkett Smith show, I said to the other four women, how long do you think this has been going on? And they all said, well, forever. No, no. This racism business, judging people on the basis of the color of their skin, started during the Spanish Inquisition, when they realized that they had killed a whole lot of people who weren't Jewish, and they had to find another way to determine who to kill. And then they set upon skin color. That's when this racism based on skin color started. It has not been around forever. If I leave a legacy, I want the legacy that Robert Wald Sussman gave to all of us. Realize that this is not something that has been going on forever. It is not God-given. It is a result of people needing another way to determine who to kill. And we're still using it because we're still ignorant. But we don't have to be. This is not something we were born with. This is something we learned after we're born. But I found out that we teach it before birth. I was asked to work with a group of midwives in a hospital. And I said, why me? And they said, because we are midwives, because we are all registered nurses, and we have been in the delivery rooms, and we realize that white women are treated better than women of color are in the delivery room. So we are going to be midwives so that we can treat everyone fairly. Now think about that. We start with you before birth, and there are still cemeteries in this country where black people are not allowed to be buried. We don't put with you after you're dead because we are so ignorant about skin color. This is all ignorance, and the answer to ignorance is educators who will be involved in leading people out of ignorance.
Jane, how did you give birth to your book, the experiment? How did you give birth to Blue Eye, Brown Eye, the experiment? How did that come about?
Well, number one, you've got to quit calling this an experiment because it's illegal and that's the way that goes. Anyway, people who call this an experiment want to make it a bad thing to do because it is illegal to experiment on people without their knowledge or without their permission. This never has been and never will be for me an experiment. It's an educational experience. It's an exercise in leading people out of ignorance. Now, what was your question?
When did you give birth to this experience? How did you give birth to it? How did it come about?
I watched my dad. I was born the same year that Adolf Hitler and Franklin Roosevelt came to power, 1933. And when Hitler was doing his ugly things, I watched my dad come home from a movie and say, it made me so mad, I wanted to throw my boot at the screen. I wanted to take my boot off and throw it at the screen because of what Hitler was doing. And one of the ways Hitler decided who went to the gas chamber was eye color. I knew in 1941 to 45 that if I were in Germany, I wouldn't dare walk down the street because I'd be all right, I have blue eyes. But my dad would be in big trouble. He had hazel eyes. They'd have killed him. And I used to say to my roommate in college, I'd come home from a weekend at home, and say, if hazel eyes ever go out of style, my dad's in big trouble. Because my dad would say things about Hitler and things about the things that had happened when he was a kid. And at that point, I realized eye color could be used and had been used in my lifetime to determine whether one lived or died. And so when Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, there was a logical way to discriminate in my classroom because eye color and skin color are caused by the same chemical, melanin. And if you have a lot of melanin in your skin, your hairy eyes, you have dark hair, dark skin, and dark eyes. But if you only have a little, then you have much lighter skin, much lighter hair, much lighter eyes, and that's all it is. It's just a chemical in our bodies. When I remembered my father, remembered the things he said, I decided there's a way to teach people not to treat people unfairly on the basis of physical characteristics over which we have no control. He didn't treat my brothers any better than he treated my sisters and me. My mother did, because she was quite certain that all of her sons were going to be priests. Oh, how wrong she was about that. And she was quite certain that all of her daughters were going to be nuns. Well, none of that happened. But she treated us differently on the basis of physical characteristics over which we had no control. My dad didn't. My dad treated us all the same. That's the way it is. That's the way you treat your children. That's the way you treat other people. He was a totally, as far as I'm concerned, a totally moral man, the most moral man I've ever known. And that exercise started with my father.
Jay, for those who want to reach out to you and have you come and speak at a college or a group, how can they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me by sending me an email to ellioTT.blibri@gmail.com. But if you're going to send me hate mail, don't bother. Because I may read it after the first sentence, I might not. And if the spelling is bad, forget it. But a couple of months ago, I thought, well, this is getting interesting. I believe I'll write another book. And I'll put on the left side, on the left page, I'll put one of these pieces of hate mail. And on the right page, I'll put one of these pieces of mail that say, I'm wonderful. And I thought about that, and I thought, no, you're giving the haters as much credit as you give the non-haters. Not going to do that. So I'm not going to write the book. The book I did write, I wrote because I wanted my children, my grandchildren, and now I have one great-grandchild, and I want them to know the truth about what happened instead of what people say about what happened.
Wow, I like that. With this experience, the blue-eye, brown-eye experience, is it different between children than it is with adults?
No, and that's what's really terrifying. When I put adults through that blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise, that's when I get hit. That's when I get threatened with death. That's when people storm out of the room, panic, because I'm treating them badly. They act worse than children do because they have the power to do it. But they exhibit all the behaviors, all the anger, all the fear, all the intimidation that children do when you do the exercise with them. That was the scariest thing I found out. The first time I did the exercise with adults was a group of Rotarians. And they acted exactly the way the 9-year-olds had. And I thought, oh my God, here these folks are, and they've grown old, but they haven't grown up. My 9-year-olds, after that exercise, during that exercise, they grew up. They began to think in a sensible, logical, reasonable way. But adults, when you put them through the exercise, and the reason it happens is, when I do the exercise, I'm in my adult, my parent ego state. That forces all those people, those adults who are the people in the group, into their child ego state. And they act like children. The 9-year-old comes out of those adults immediately when I do the exercise with blue-eyed people, adults. You need to see one of the films that we've done. Inside every person, there lives their child. Their child is in there. And if you go into your parent ego state, their child comes out. And it's absolutely amazing. When people are acting in racist ways, they are back in the age of 3 to 5, 3 to 7, 3 to 9 at the most. And if you realize that, then you have to say to yourself, I'll have to react to them I'll be in my adult ego state instead of my parent ego state, and maybe we can get through this. Maybe I can get them to get into at least their parent ego state for a minute, and then maybe into their adult ego state, but you have to work hard at that. And that's the reason when I do the exercise with adults, I end up with a migraine headache, and I know why, because that's stressful. To try to relate to people, to pull people out of childhood and into adulthood.
In your opinion, Jane, what is the best way you believe that the best way to ensure equality of opportunity for all people, all race?
Well, first you have to see all people as possibly being as smart as you are, and possibly being even smarter than you are. You have to be prepared to treat people not as well as you ought to be treated, but as well as you can possibly treat another person. You have to see every person as an equal human being. Now, I'm not equal to anybody else on the face of the earth. I'm not as smart as black people. I'm not as tall as most men. I'm not as so-called pretty as most young women. So I'm not really their equal, but I deserve equal treatment under law. And if that's in our Constitution, you have to provide people with equal treatment under the law, whether you like them or not. Now, there are lots of people that I will give equal treatment to that I don't like, but I still don't have the right to treat them in a non-equal way just because I don't like them. That's my job, to do what the Constitution of the United States says to do, which is act equal treatment under the law, and that's what I will provide. Don't have to love you to give you equal treatment. But if I say I love you and I don't treat you equally, then I don't really love you. And that's what's going on in this country today on a minute-by-minute basis. We are telling black people, we love you, but we won't treat you equally. So that means we don't really love them.
And that's my question to you, because why is there such a natural fear for white people with black people? What is the fear?
There isn't a natural fear. There isn't a natural fear. Did you ever watch a bunch of little teeny tiny kids playing together? Did you ever watch a little white boy and a little black boy playing together? Those kids they don't see one another as not equals. They see one another as a kid their size and their age that talks their language, which may be pretty primitive, but they don't see color as a negative. I'll never forget when one of my friends, or one of my relatives, she is married to an Iranian, so their children are, and she's white, so their children are white, but when the kid went to school, he came home and said, I want my hair cut like Johnny's is. Well, so she got a haircut. The kid said, no, this doesn't look like Johnny's hair. I want hair like Johnny's. So she went to school for the parent-teacher meeting, and she said, which one of these kids is Johnny? Which one of these parents are Johnny's parents? Which, do you have a picture of Johnny? So she showed her a picture of Johnny. Johnny's a black boy with curly, curly hair. The kid wanted hair like Johnny's. She went home and said, you can't have hair like Johnny's. Johnny's hair is that way. Naturally, you can't get that. I'm sorry. He was just curious. He wanted hair like his friend. You have to be taught to be a racist. You have to be taught to see color as a negative. I've seen little kids playing together with total joy in one another. And yesterday at the park, I watched my little great-grandchild reach up and try to touch this little kid's hair. And the kid didn't want to be touched, but if he wanted to play, he didn't want anybody messing with his hair. And I thought, that's the best lesson you're going to have this year, my little friend. Because that kid doesn't want his hair touched.
And
if we could just teach that to adults, if we could just teach that to grown women, look white women, don't reach out and touch that kid's curly hair just because you want to know whether it's spiky. Keep your hands to yourself.
Jay, stop.
If we could just teach that lesson, am I exaggerating something?
Jane, stop for a minute, because I am about to do the church dance. I'm about to do the hallelujah dance, because I need you to repeat that. I hate when I have my hair braided or it's curly, and white women want to touch my hair without asking me my permission. Or when I've had my hair braided, I would hear white women mention Bo Derek, and I'm like, Bo Derek?
When some woman, white woman, reaches out to touch your hair, what you do, all you do is go, she's off the bark at her. She, if she's my age, she'll have an accident. you have no person has the right to just reach out and touch another. Mm. I don't care what male, female, black, white, I don't care. Keep your hands to yourself. But it is, telling you as a white woman, it's a tremendous temptation to want to reach out and touch somebody's hair. Just a minute, the telephone, just a minute, I think I have a visitor here, but go ahead. No, I reject that bird, and I say to that person, how long does it take to braid that hair? There's another thing people expose you to on a daily basis, unless I'm much mistaken. When I see you, I don't see you black. You say, do you see me orange or green or purple? Well, I just don't see black. Oh, well, do you see dirt? Well, yeah, but you don't know what I mean, and then you have to say, I know what you mean. You mean you are disturbed by people who have black skin. So you're going to just pretend that I don't have that problem. You need to know that my skin is not a problem for me. But when you tell me you don't see it, that means it's a problem for you. Don't force your problem onto my skin. Do we understand one another? And they will understand that. But they still will be, if they're teachers, they'll be inclined to stand up in front of a group of students and say, I don't care whether you're black, brown, red, yellow, or green with purple polka dots, I'm going to treat you all alike. Number one, they never put the word white in there. And number two, you don't see people who are green with purple polka dots unless they're from outer space. And when you rank all, when you put all those people of color in with those who are green from outer space, you are saying to them, you're all aliens, but I'm going to pretend that I have to teach you anyway. See, teachers say things that they ought not to say. And one of those things is that one, and I don't see color. Because all you have to do is say to one of those teachers, what color is your car? She'll know what color it is, because she sees color, and she's not being real, and she's trying to deny her own racism. Own it. Admit that you've got it, because it's like cancer. Until you admit that you've got it, we can't cure it. When you admit that you're a racist, then we can cure that with education. But if you keep on denying that you've got it, you'll never take the cure. The problem is, in this country, and in all countries, I suspect, some people grow older. Some people grow up. Those who just grow older maintain their racism, and sexism, and ageism, and homophobia, and ethnocentrism. Because let's face it, the way we treat all those, well, the way those other isms work, are all based on how we are allowed to treat people of color. If you grow up, you give that up. If you don't grow up, you keep on, you maintain your ignorance, the ignorance that you lived with as a child. Those who grow up, give it up, and get quite happy when they no longer have to say, this is my friend. And somebody says, oh, you're black. No, I don't regard her as black. She's just my friend. Well, sorry, but she looks black to me. Well, how could you say a thing like that? Well, sorry, but that's what color that person looks, and that one over there looks more yellow-toned, and that one over there looks pink, and that one over there, you know, these colors are different. They aren't important, but they're important to people who have them, and they must be important to you, or you wouldn't be afraid to say, this is my black friend.
I just love your passion. What do you do to, just for you day, what do you do?
What do I do to unwind? Number one, I never get wound up. And, you know, somebody calls me and I say these things and I mean every word of these things. And then I go and read a good book. And right now I'm reading the story of Frederick Douglass' life. Oh, my God, everybody has to read it. It's such brilliance, such determination, such commitment. This you do not see very often. And we don't learn enough about Frederick Douglass. I'm reading that now. I read one or two or three books a week because I don't know enough. I have to get educated. I have to know more than I do. So I read a lot.
Well, you and I have that on, because that's one of my favorite that's my passion, reading. I love to read. So in closing, I want to thank you for being a wonderful guest. And I knew we were related, and I'm glad you gave us facts that we are related. So
Yes, we are.
So, and we're going to have you back on the show again. But we want everyone, please, in closing, also, you know, don't forget to follow the Women Are Worthy show on Facebook and on Instagram. The Women Are Worthy show, we're on Facebook and Instagram and on YouTube. Yes, we have YouTube. We're on YouTube as the Women Are Worthy Network. And if you have any questions to send, I'm also now going to be rolling out my life coaching regarding relationships. So contact me at womenareworthy@att.net, womenareworthy@att.net. Any speaking engagements, you can contact me at womenareworthy.net. Jane, it's just been a pleasure to just have you coming on our show and just talking on our podcast, rather, and just sharing your knowledge with us. So basically, the Women Are Worthy, our mission is we're here to empower, embrace, and motivate the soul. We hope you've enjoyed the journey on the Women Are Worthy podcast. Our intention is to have you relaxed while listening to the show, relate to the topics, and release any negative stress during the course of the podcast. And without further ado, we want to wish everyone a wonderful week. Miss Jane Elliott, you are phenomenal. I'm going to call you again because we're going to be doing more things. And I have my to-do list, whether you know you've given me or not. I have all the books written down, and I am going to be reading them. So thank you for giving me my assignment as well.
Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And again, please contact the Women Are Worthy, show, and, you know, feel free to subscribe. Not feel free. We want you to subscribe to UpToMeRadio.com. UpToMeRadio.com and look for the Women Are Worthy show. So without further ado, have a wonderful week, guys. Bye.